This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Natalie Wynn, left-wing YouTube sensation and creator of the channel ContraPoints, knows a thing or two about being canceled. She herself has been canceled several times for a host of offenses, dragged, bullied, shamed off Twitter by people who were once her supporters and allies, including members of the trans and gender nonconforming community. She herself is a trans woman, and it's left her lots of time to reflect on the limits of how we usually talk about cancellation.
On the one side are a bunch of male comedians who constantly bitch about how cancel culture is out of control. You can't joke about anything anymore without these millennial jackals trying to get you in trouble. And the other side is mostly progressive think piece authors who argue that there's no such thing as cancel culture. It's just that powerful people are finally being held accountable for their actions and they can't handle it, so they go around bitching about cancel culture. Now, unfortunately, neither...
That's Wynn in her most recent video, Canceling, a well-argued, entertaining anatomy of cancel culture. Her exegesis tracks the evolution and impact of canceling. She offers a series of tropes and principles that define the course of cancellation. The first one is presumption of guilt, self-explanatory. The second is abstraction, where the offending comment, it's usually a comment, is stripped of its specifics, its context, and reduced to a description, as in, he made a racist comment, she made a homophobic remark. The third trope is essentialism. Now it's not just the offense that's abstracted, it's the accused offender. They're no longer guilty of bad things, they're bad people. A racist, a homophobe, a predator. As to Natalie's offenses...
I mean, there's almost too many to list at this point, but I suppose the big one is that I made a video where I had a voice actor, Buck Angel, a trans man who's an adult performer, read a line from John Waters' book. Mm-hmm.
One must remember, there is such a thing as good bad taste and bad bad taste. To understand bad taste, one must have very good taste.
And I thought it was kind of just a cool and quirky casting decision. But Buck Angel turns out to have a bad reputation on social media. The accusation is that Buck Angel uses a lot of rhetoric, calling himself a transsexual, which is supposed to be different from transgender, and doing this kind of distancing thing where he wants to make a big point of the fact that he has been through the medical procedures. Mm-hmm. And a lot of trans people who either don't pursue medical interventions or neither identify as male or female, who are called non-binary people, find this language to be kind of off-putting and to be sort of exclusionary.
So he did that, and that was abstracted.
Yes. So these kinds of comments, which I still look at as sort of ambiguous, people see that and they say, okay, Buck Angel hates non-binary people. He's trying to destroy us. He's trying to erase us. Buck Angel becomes a transphobe and a bigot by that logic.
I guess this would lead us to the transitive property of cancellation. Since you cast him, you have his cancellation by association?
That's right. I used 10 seconds of his voiceover in a 48-minute video, but that's enough for people to associate him with me so that I'm guilty of his sins unless I publicly condemn every bad thing he's ever tweeted. This is the most frustrating thing to me because it really limits the number of people that you can associate with or work with. It has a kind of isolating effect.
You laid out in your program the chain of guilt by association. It followed from Buck to you and then to your friends and then to friends of friends and so on.
Once you accept the logic that someone who has a minor association with someone else is accountable for everything that person has done, you can build these kind of chains of guilt by association, which get honestly like comical. A trans woman on Twitter named Mia Mulder, who I've never even met, tweeted a heart at my friend Ollie, who had failed to condemn me for me failing to condemn Buck Angel. At this point, your head starts to spin because you can't even keep track of who's guilty of what and why.
But your association with Buck didn't trigger your only cancellation.
Oh, no. There's been many other occasions.
Some of it has to do with a series of tweets you did about pronouns.
I did a 3-tweet thread on Twitter I started out by complaining that I was frustrated, basically, with having cis people, people who are not trans.
Nice lefty women announcing superfluously what their pronoun is, so you can too.
Exactly. And then in this thread, I don't know, by the end of it, I kind of had said my piece and was like, okay, I guess it's not so bad. I said, I think at the end of the thread, I guess it's good for people who use they, them pronouns and who actually do need to introduce their pronouns at every occasion where they want them to be used. So it wasn't the most well thought out thread. I was just kind of expressing a feeling that I had, and the feeling even changed over the course of those three little tweets. But people just took this as me saying that the whole practice of asking people what their pronouns are is wrong, and that I'm being discriminatory towards trans people who don't pass or towards trans people who use non-binary pronouns. Once people start quote tweeting you and recontextualizing tweets from the middle of your thread in the most uncharitable ways, there's kind of nothing you can say to stop it.
Let's move on to the next principle, pseudo-moralism or pseudo-intellectualism. You say that cancelers use moral or intellectualism to provide a phony pretext for the call out. You can pretend you just want an apology. You can pretend you're just a concerned citizen who wants the person to improve. You can pretend you're simply offering criticism when what you're really doing is attacking a person's career, reputation, out of spite, envy, revenge. You sounded pretty angry in your program there, and hurt.
I mean, I was angry and hurt. If you play some of those clips of me reading the tweets sent at me, it's not really the language of intellectual critique or moral criticism.
If any of you still support ContraPoints after her bigging up and collaborating with True Scum Buck Angel, you're no friend to gender nonconforming, non-passing, and non-binary trans people. F*** her, and f*** her, f*** Rift. I am absolutely furious right now. ContraPoints is a conniving rat f***ing capo who could do with a fully wound backhand to the mouth. Since I'm out of Twitter jail now, I just want to say f*** ContraPoints, her sycophantic stance, and all her bread tube chums who close ranks to protect her after she throws the rest of the trans community under the bus for profit. Natalie Wynn is a f***ing grifter.
You know, it feels like a hate mob, but you're supposed to respond to it like some kind of academic criticism.
You see demands for the immediate apology and the perception that if you apologize immediately, that means you're sincere. But if you wait...
Once there's hundreds of people coming at me on Twitter, my instinct is to shut down. I go off Twitter. I go away for a few days. When you're sort of in the heat of the moment, lots of people are coming at you with lots of accusations. The tendency is to be defensive. And the things said at that moment tend to be not the most carefully thought out things you'll ever say. So in my opinion, it's much better to wait, but then people use your silence as evidence that you don't care, that you're a coward, that you're running away.
I'm thinking about the difficulty of the position that you've found yourself in by being a public figure with devoted fans on the internet who want to watch you because you are authentic, but who also demand that you simultaneously be morally correct.
You're supposed to be an authentic, relatable human being and somehow meet everyone's individual definition of moral perfection. It's very important to take criticism. I have a master's degree in philosophy. Philosophy is generally pretty useless, but in those classes and seminars, you write a paper about some topic in ethics, for example, and then, you know, you sit around and the professor and the other students criticize what you said, and you're expected to sit there defending your ideas or correcting your ideas.
In canceling, you even directed viewers to some of your critics.
I actually love to listen to people who criticize me politely because I'm not a dogmatist. I want to learn. I want to believe the right thing. And I'm sure that there's information I don't have and mistakes that I've made. The problem is when what someone is doing is just compiling a list of every bad thing you've ever done for years, that's not someone who's criticizing you. This is someone who is building a case against you.
That's how you felt.
Oh, absolutely. There's some people who are criticizing me in good faith, but this overwhelming Twitter crowd, that basically is just an attempt to convince an audience that I'm a bad person and must be shunned.
This feeds into your last principle, dualism. All offenses are equal and everyone falls into the category of good or bad. I wonder what happens when we put people into this irredeemable category.
it encourages fear. It encourages conformity. When the punishment for minor mistakes is permanent exile, people just kind of keep their mouths shut. Dissent and disagreement are much more difficult. People are willing to lead these kinds of crusades rather than become the victims of them. And it's really destructive to anyone who wants to have good faith disagreement.
Now, let's talk about the pain of your own cancellation. You talked about how you'd endured vile hatred from Nazis on the internet, an actual sexual assault, and yet somehow cancellation was worse?
Yes, when you're being horribly abused by someone like Nazis, or if you're, as I was, sexually assaulted by an acquaintance, you know, these things are terribly painful to go through, of course. But what makes the canceling worse is that it's being done to you by people in your own community. You sort of watch yourself be erased by the sort of parody evil version of you. And you know, being attacked by Nazis, okay, the things they're saying hurt. But at the end of the day, you sort of have this noble sense of your victimization at the hands of these terrible people. But when you're being trashed by people who are supposedly on your side, it undercuts your self-worth at a very fundamental level. And it's so profoundly isolating because the people who are your allies have said that you're bad and have cast you out. Other people become afraid to associate with you. It's almost like having leprosy or something. And that's a very depressing experience.
But a lot of people who join in on the cancellation argue that it's punching up. Most of the power and money in this country is accumulated in white male hands. But they also said that they're punching up when they punch a YouTube celebrity.
When the target is R. Kelly, when the target is Ricky Gervais, a lot of times this is punching up. It's someone who is a very powerful position who can't really be professionally affected very much by Twitter, where this becomes just totally false. As I've seen, like, canceling against people who are sort of much more minor figures. I'm thinking about the John Ronson book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. There's a couple classic examples in there. Yeah. One of them is Justine Sacco, who made a very tasteless tweet about AIDS to her 170 Twitter followers and then became the number one trending topic on Twitter. Well, that's not punching up. That's hundreds of thousands of people going after this one random woman. I'm kind of a gray area case where it's like, yeah, I am a public figure, but I'm in some ways still dependent on social media communities for support. I mean, I think that I actually have kind of, or I'm very close to breaking through to the point where this stuff actually doesn't hurt very much professionally anyway. But I think that as a trans woman, I'm marginalized socially where I am dependent on support from these kinds of communities, and being canceled within trans community can actually really hurt my life. So my case is a little bit debatable as to whether it's punching up or down.
Also, the people who join in the cancellation chorus have to consider their moral role. You quote John Ronson again, who wrote that the snowflake doesn't need to feel responsible for the avalanche, but actually the snowflake does.
You feel like what you're doing couldn't possibly make that much of an impact because it's just your tweets. But when these things add up, they have a totally different effect. Even when you're not talking about abuse, even when it's good faith criticism, if you get criticized 400 times, that is emotionally overwhelming.
But you can leave Twitter, right? A lot of the progressive critiques that say there's really no such thing as cancellation culture, it's just people criticizing you, they would say, if you don't like it, then leave the platform.
Well, there's something to that, and I have left the platform, in fact. But social media is the public square of our age. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be better if we didn't force people to do that just to escape harassment. Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons we reached out to you this week is because of the conversation about Joe Rogan's endorsement of Bernie Sanders. The dilemma it seems to have posed to so many hits on a lot of the themes in your canceling episode. So what do you see around the role of cancellation and dualism when it comes to building political power?
where cancel culture is absolutely devastating to any kind of progressive causes is right in situations like this. When you're trying to win an election, you need to build a big coalition. And that means working with people who have major disagreements with you, all kinds of people who are very problematic. I feel like we're doomed when I see a politician like Bernie Sanders, who kind of represents the best shot progressives have in an election against Donald Trump, to see us basically condemning him because he has an endorsement from this media figure who has millions of largely white male viewers. It's absolute madness to me that this is seen as anything but positive. When I approach criticism of someone, even someone who's said like pretty bigoted things, oftentimes I'm not really trying to reach them, but I'm trying to reach their followers or people who like them. For example, I've talked about people like Jordan Peterson or Ben Shapiro, like these right-wing political commentators with big followings online. And when I'm wording my arguments, I try to leave the door open. I don't say, if you follow these people, if you agree with these people, that you're bigots, get out. That doesn't work. I try to say, look, I understand why these people's ideas might be appealing. I can see things from your point of view. Here's why I think they're wrong. I leave them not with a condemnation, but with an extended hand, like a chance for them to take me up on this offer to see things my way.
Natalie, thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Natalie Nguyen is a YouTuber and creator of the channel ContraPoints.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leia Fetter, John Hanrahan, and Asta Chattavetti. We had more help from Anthony Blancy. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.